Good morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for the 10th of March, 2022 will come to order. I'd like to welcome everyone back to our hearing room after something of a hiatus. There is a late submitted document. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 22-06-A.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. Is there any discussion of the motion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. We have three matters on our agenda this morning. The first is advisory opinion draft 2022-01, Joan Farr for U.S. Senate. Ms. Waldstreicher and Mr. Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, commissioners. Agenda document 22-02-A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by Joan Farr, candidate for Senate in Oklahoma and Kansas, and her principal campaign committee. Ms. Farr proposes to provide copies of a book she wrote and currently owns as rewards to persons who make contributions to the committee. The request is asked whether this proposal is permissible under the Act of Commission Members. The draft concludes that the proposal is permissible under the Act and Commission Regulations because distributing the books to contributors would constitute an in-kind contribution to the committees, and candidates may make unlimited expenditures, including in-kind contributions from their own assets. We did not receive any comments on the request, and yes.
Thank you, Counselor. Colleagues, is there any discussion or questions for the Office of General Counsel? Seeing none, are there any motions? Mr. Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of agenda document 22-05-A, the response to Joan Farr for U.S. Senate.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there any discussion of the motion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. We'll move to our second item, revised Form 1, Mr. Buckley and Mr. Knopf. Morning, Council.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document number 22-06-A contains a revised FEC Form 1 and instructions for FEC Form 1, which provide options to register as a committee that makes only independent expenditures, or as a committee with both an independent expenditure-only account and a contribution account. Also attached is an explanation and justification of the changes which will be sent to Congress along with the revised FEC Form 1 and its instructions as part of Congress's review of the revisions. Assuming the Commission approves the agenda document and there is no objection from either House of Congress, the form and its instructions will become effective 10 legislative days after the package is received by Congress. Thank you, and I will be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions to the Office of General Counsel?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Traynor.
So I noticed that we use, well, first of all, with regard to Form 1, is Form 1 a legal document, or is it an accounting document, or what type of document would you consider Form 1?
I think it's more an administrative document. It allows the administration of the registration process.
Okay.
For committees.
But has, so it doesn't have any legal significance for us as far as the same information could be submitted in some other form and it would be okay?
I don't believe so. I think committees are required to file the Form 1 in order to register with the commission.
Okay. So could a
committee file? Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Go ahead, Counselor.
Actually, the way that the requirements are written in the regulation, they require to submit the Form 1 or the information that is asked for in the Form 1 in another form that they may choose. So they could submit a letter containing all the information that is, you know, asked for in the Form 1 or covered by the Form 1, and that would satisfy the requirement of the regulation.
Perfect. That's what I thought. Okay, continue, Mr. Chairman, of course. So currently, how are organizations delineating themselves as independent expenditure only committees.
They filed the Form 1 indicating that they are a non-connected committee, and they file a letter along with the Form 1, which was described in the Commission's Common Sense 10AO. And if you give me a second, I can find that language for you. The Common Sense 10AO contained an attachment, which was approved by the commission, contained language that states, this committee intends to make independent expenditures and consistent with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit decision in SpeechNow versus FEC, it therefore intends to raise funds in unlimited amounts. This committee will not use those funds to make contributions, whether direct, in kind, or via coordinated communications to federal candidates or committees.
So currently organizations that are filing with us don't use the term super PAC when they file with us, correct?
Correct. Not if they follow that particular language.
And it's particularly important for us to be precise in the language that we use, correct?
It is, if I may, super PAC is a rather well-known term, and it is used elsewhere on the commission's website to describe this particular type of committee.
Okay, then let's talk about what is the morphology of the term super PAC. Where did it originate, and how did it move into our lexicon?
I do not know that.
Oh, I know. A journalist came up with it, and it just took hold.
Great. I agree with Commissioner Weintraub. That's where it came from. Has the commission previously considered how to appropriately define the term super PAC such that it would be a legal term that we would use?
I don't believe the term super PAC I don't believe the commission ever attempted to define the term super PAC, no.
Was it included in some rulemakings that we may have had?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Mr. Knopf, go ahead.
Yes. There was an attempt 10 years ago or more to undertake a rulemaking where the nature of these kinds of organizations would have been described and explained in the rules. However, for a number of reasons, that effort never really got off the ground past the initial drafting stage for a notice of proposed rulemaking, and it remains a dormant yet pending matter.
And those were the rulemakings following the SpeechNow and Emily's List litigation?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I used to refer to the rulemaking as the Emily's List SpeechNow rulemaking.
Great. Mr. Chairman, I think that's all the questions that I have. I would, at the appropriate time, I would like to make a motion to strike the use of the term super PAC, both in the form and in the instructions and what we're submitting to Congress. And just to give a little bit of background to this, I think the commission itself is very particular about the information that we require from those individuals that file with us. I think we have an obligation to be as professional as we possibly can in the documents that we put out and the information that we give to the public, and to be as precise as we possibly can if we're going to demand that from those that are regulated by us. And I think that the adoption and use of a term that was 10 years ago considered by the commission and tried to be defined and has not yet been legally defined by the commission, to then now insert it into a form that we're going to put out for the public to use, I think we're kind of backdooring into adopting a term and a legal usage that is not very precise. I think calling that those organizations independent expenditure only committees is appropriate because that's what they are. I think it avoids the confusion between those type of organizations and the ones that come out of the Cary litigation. And so at the appropriate time, I would just like to make a motion to strike. Thank you.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I have a thought.
Mr. Knopp.
Okay. I appreciate everything that Commissioner Trainor has said. I just wanted to point out that the form itself does not actually require any committee to self-identify either as an independent expenditure-only committee or as a hybrid committee. It is entirely voluntary for them to check those boxes. The form instructions do not say anywhere that they must check one of those boxes if they are one of those entities. And that was very careful. We were very careful in making sure that it didn't, because actually we can't require them to check either of those boxes. However, what I will say, as with the voluntary letter that they may submit attached to their statement of organization, identifying themselves as one of these organizations, it is basically to their benefit to do so if they choose to, because if they don't find a way, either by checking a box on the form or by submitting the letter as an attachment to the Form 1, then they are going to get flagged by RAD for what seems to RAD to be their receipt of impermissible or excessive contributions. And so I would argue that it would be within their interest to do so. However, just wanted to clarify that neither the letter that is an attachment to the Common Sense 10 AO and the Club for Growth AO is required, nor would the checking either of those boxes be required with these form revisions and form instructions.
Thank you, Councillor. Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate my colleague's desire for precision. That is a good thing. I will note that the form, which I intend to approve as is, does specify independent expenditure only committee, political committee with super PAC and parens, and then on the next line, political committee with both contribution and non-contribution accounts, parens, hybrid PAC. So it is, those two kinds of committees are distinguished. I think it's actually very useful to have the term that everybody uses on the form. People, you know, I credit where credit is due. The journalist was Eliza Newland Carney. It took me a second to come up with her name. For whatever reason, that name took hold. Everybody calls them that. And I think for the ease of the public, figuring out what these different committees are, and for journalists who are looking into it, I think it is it makes it all more accessible. Having said that, I would welcome the opportunity to do a rulemaking on super PACs. What they are called is just the beginning of the issues that I think we need to address. We have not done any rulemakings addressing the many facets of super PACs and how they have affected the political system since they came into creation in 2010, and it is long, long overdue. There are many regulations that we have, notably our coordination regulations that were written in an era before super PACs and did not anticipate their creation. And I personally don't think that they can sustain the weight of the developments that have happened since those regs were written. They are really out of date now. So if my colleague is interested in working on that rulemaking, I would welcome the opportunity.
Any further discussion? Are there any motions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Trainor.
I would move the adoption of Form 1 with the amendment of striking the term super PAC wherever it is found in the form, in the instructions, and in the explanation and justification for the revision.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there any discussion of the motion? Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the reasons previously stated, I will not be able to support the motion, but I hope to be able to support a motion to adopt the form as is.
For slightly different reasons, I will also not be supporting the motion. My reasons are, someone very wise once said that missions that cannot be trusted in small matters should not be trusted in great. And I think this forum has been something that we have been hoping to get done for a very long time. It addresses cases that are a dozen years old. And I have a great deal of sympathy for Commissioner Schneider's points. And if we had been conducting this discussion in 2010, when the need for such a form arose, we'd probably be dealing with a different English language. But with the passage of a dozen years, I do agree that these terms, while imprecise, have taken root. And I think it would be somewhat confusing to casual observers of our work to not see them included. Whereas I'm sure that sophisticated counsel would understand what an IEOPC is, I suspect that neophytes in the political process may not. I'd prefer to resolve them. The discussion. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
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 Mr. Walther? Excuse me, Mr. Vice Chair.
Aye.
Aye. The motion fails with 3 in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Cooksey, and Commissioner Traynor, and 3 opposed, myself, Commissioner Broussard, and Commissioner Weintraub. Are there further motions? Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of agenda document number 22-06-A.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Is there any discussion of the motion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion passes with 5 in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Broussard, Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Weintraub, and myself, and 1 opposed, Commissioner Traynor. Are there further business on this agenda item? Seeing none. We'll move to our 3rd item for this morning. Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Mike Brown for Indiana, matter A19-02. I have Mr. Krogan presenting this morning.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Before you is the resubmission of the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum, ADRM, on Mike Braun for Indiana, MBFI. The committee requested an audit hearing on October 4th, 2021, which the commission approved on October 12th and held on November 10th, 2021. MBFI provided new documentation prior to the audit hearing that is reflected in the ADRM before the commission. The ADRM provides the audit staff's recommendations for each of the following findings in the draft final audit report. Finding 1, misstatement of financial activity. Finding 2, failure to file 48-hour notices. Finding 3, disclosure of occupation and or name of employer. Finding 4, receipt of apparent prohibited contributions, loans. Finding 6, disclosure of memo entries and candidate loans. And given the impact of the pending Supreme Court decision in Ted Cruz for Senate v. Federal Election Commission, the ADRM recommends that the commission refrain from considering finding 5, receipt of contributions in excess of the limit, and finding 7, prohibited candidate personal loan repayments until the court issues its decision. Please note that the contributions from individuals component of finding 5 would still be viable even if the loan repayment limitation were struck down. Following the court's decision, the audit staff will recommend for the commission's consideration disposition of the 2 findings. In light of this, it may be beneficial for the commission to consider each of the findings individually. We're available to answer any questions.
A quick preliminary question. Is there a stay of the district court's order in Cruz versus FEC?
There is not.
Thank you. Colleagues? Mr. Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since this is a public meeting for the benefit of the public. I will throw this open to anybody from audit or OGC who wants to take this, but the process in this audit was a little bit unusual. Usually when we have an ADRM, an audit division recommendation memorandum, the draft final audit report, what we call the DFAR that is attached, is in sync with that recommendation memorandum and supports each of the recommendations. That is not the case in this instance. So I think it would be beneficial to explain how we got to this juncture and why these two documents that we have in front of us don't actually match up.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner Wanger, for that question. I think that is a good idea. As Ryan just stated, the committee responded to the DFAR on October 4th, and at that time, they also requested an audit hearing. The audit hearing was conducted November 10th. Prior to that audit hearing, the committee provided a lot of documentation associated with the finding four about whether or not loans were made in insurance of repayment. There were a lot of records with that, and once we had a chance to go through those records, that changed audit's position because the documentation showed that it was made on the insurance of repayment. Had that information been provided in response to the draft final audit report or even in response to the interim audit report, then the ADRM in front of the commission today would have stated that. And then as far as any situation dealing with the Supreme Court decision on Ted Cruz, the audit report was adjusted depending on the stage that decision was on. So as we come down to the ADRM, we are now at the stage where the Supreme Court is still looking into that matter and hasn't finalized a decision. At the time of the draft final audit report, the Federal Election Commission was challenging the decision. So that's why it kept going the way that it was.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Morcombe. That was very helpful. Let me start with finding four, because and I think that is that one is not affected by the Cruz litigation, but the recommendation changed based on additional documentation that was supplied. As I said, normally we would have a draft final audit report attached that would go into great detail as to what those documents were and how they supported the recommendation. We don't have that today. So could you or one of your colleagues please provide a little bit more elaboration on the documents that were provided and how they supported the new recommendation?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Councilor.
Yeah. So the committee provided roughly, I believe, around 12 or 13 documentation that supported that. They included letters from the banks that described the process that the bank used with providing loans to candidates without any type of collateral. If the candidate is considered a high net worth. So the letters from all the institutions pretty much verify that. And then as far as the other part of the finding, finding four, part B, the corporate contribution report as candidate loans. The committee, in response to the interim audit report, provided a letter from its CPA, but there was no other documentation to demonstrate what was reviewed, what supported that $1.5 million. So again, when the committee provided all this bank institution information prior to the audit hearing, that included more documentation to support the CPA's letter. So once we had all of that information in place, we were able to see, yes, this was documented that these were not prohibited. But it was a lot, and it was right before the audit hearing as opposed to in response to the interim audit report or in response to the draft final audit report. And if I may also add, this is information the committee knew we needed back in 2019 as we're going through field work. Again, it was, of course, mentioned again in interim audit report, which the committee received back in February of 2021.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just to be clear, does the additional documentation that we received with respect to finding 4A demonstrate not only an assurance of repayment, but also that the candidate was treated similarly to similarly situated individuals, that this was not a, you know, special favor for a political actor, but rather would have been the same kind of loan would have been available to another individual of similar financial, in a similar financial situation.
Yes, it does.
One more, Mr. Chairman?
Of course.
Thank you. I think Mr. Krogan alluded to this earlier, but with respect to finding five, if the Supreme Court affirms the lower court ruling and the regulation is conclusively struck down, would that resolve the entirety of finding five, or could there potentially be some contributions that would still be in excess of the limit?
Mr. Chairman?
Markham?
Yes, Commissioner Weintraub. If the Supreme Court decides to uphold the ruling and strike down, then there would still be a finding, a material finding for assessment from contributions from individuals. The amount would go down, but it would still be material. We're still looking at roughly over
$700,000 in excesses?
Yes, correct, for individuals.
Okay, so not an insignificant amount of excessive contributions.
No.
That would not be resolved regardless of what happens with that regulation, or whether the regulation,
correct,
whether the lower court decision is stayed or not stayed, whether the regulation's on the books or not on the books, we still have $700,000 in potential excesses.
Yes, although the assessments from political committees will no longer be material, so that would not be there. But for individuals, yes.
That's all I have at the moment.
Thank you, Ms. Weintraub. Colleagues? Any further questions or discussion in this matter? Are there any motions? Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of agenda document 22-04-A, the resubmitted audit division recommendation memorandum on North Bond for Indiana, 319-02.
Mr. Weintraub, any discussion? I suspect there'll be a series of motions here. To be clear on where there may be divides, I am unwilling to support the findings that rely upon an enjoined regulation. And I understand the recommendation to stand aside and allow the Supreme Court to do its work. If there had been a stay of the lower court order, and our regulation remained in force, I would probably take a different view. But given that there is not, and that consequently district court's opinion does in fact order us not to apply that regulation, giving it a sort of zombie existence by allowing it to nonetheless influence our decisions, I think is inappropriate. So with that possibly minor disagreement. Yes,
I'm sorry, I just want to confirm as well with the vote that's on the table. If there is disagreement with that, that means if some of those items don't, if we don't receive the appropriate votes, it would go to other issues. Just wanted to highlight that. And the reason being is I think our auditors also stated it might be better to actually take each finding individually. Just a thought.
Thank you. You preempted the second half of my speech. So yes, that's exactly right. So we have a motion on the table from Commissioner Weintraub. I'm trying to give some public content for whether there may be disagreements on that motion. And I suspect there'll be further motions down the road. Any further discussion? Commissioner Weintraub?
It's my understanding that, got a little bit of an echo. It's my understanding that by making this motion, I'm not precluding further motions that would take the individual findings seriatim. I just thought I'd bundle them all up at once and get that out of the way. I respect your position, Mr. Chairman. The the ADRM does not recommend taking any action based on the regulation at issue. So, you know, it's, I agree with you. It is a minor disagreement, but I respect your position on that. I'm still going to support my motion.
Oh, of course, I appreciate that. I will also note that, it, at least in my view, inaction is action. So there's maybe a deeper philosophical question here. But leaving aside any of Newton's laws, any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if I may?
Of course, Ms. Brown.
I wonder if I might ask Mr. Calvert to weigh in on the question of whether or not we would be able to, subsequent to a possible split vote for Commissioner Weintraub's motion, then consider each of the things individually. My understanding was, were this motion to split 3-3, that we have substantively considered each of the findings before the commission, that to then reconsider them would individually would require the need for a motion to reconsider. I just want to make sure that we're able to subsequently consider them individually.
Thank you. That'd be a departure from our usual practice, but I will ask the parliamentarian his view.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Galbraith.
I hate to disagree with my colleague, Ms. Brown, but I believe that the seriatim motions would be sufficiently different because each of the motions would take only one finding. Those would be significantly different enough from the omnibus motion now pending so that it would be, they would all be in order.
Thank you, sir. I concur. Any additional discussion before we take our various motions? Seeing none, all in favor of Commissioner Weintraub's motion?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm not sure, Mr.
Oh, Commissioner Broussard, please.
Oh, I wasn't sure if you heard me, so I was joining in saying aye.
I had not, so that was very helpful. Thank you. All opposed?
No.
No.
No, the motion fails with 3 in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Broussard, and 3 opposed, myself, Commissioner Cooksey and Commissioner Traynor. Are there further motions?
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the Braun audit before us, I move to reject findings 5 and 7 in accordance with the summary judgment order handed down by the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia in Cruz versus Federal Elections Commission.
Thank you, Commissioner. And there is discussion. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I completely understand 7, but as the earlier colloquy showed, there's still $700,000 of potential excesses in finding 5 that would survive the regulation. Whether or not that regulation is on the books, there's still $700,000 in potential excesses. That's a lot of excesses to just ignore. So I wonder if there's some way of carving out those excesses from the ones that would be impacted by the regulation.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Since procedure is liberty, Commissioner Traynor, would you be willing to entertain a friendly amendment to move finding 7 standing alone?
So let me amend my motion then to move to, at this particular juncture, to move to reject finding 7 in accordance with the summary judgment report in the proof list.
Any discussion of the amended motion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Abstentions? Commissioner Broussard, I'm afraid I'm not able to record your vote.
Then no.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Not to worry. These are exciting modern times. The vote fails with 3 in favor, myself, Commissioner Traynor, and Commissioner Cooksey, and 3 opposed, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Weintraub, and Commissioner Broussard. Further motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I might try a positive motion that maybe might get support.
Always.
I'd like to move approval of findings 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. I suspect that would have been a motion at the tail end of this, but we can take them in any order. Is there any discussion on those points? Mm-hmm. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Vice Chair?
Yes, are you opposed? Okay. Yes, sir. Sorry.
There you are, sir. Not to worry. The motion passes unanimously. Further motions?
Probably the final one. Mr. Chair, I would move to reject finding 5 in accordance with the summary judgment order handed down by the U.S. District Court in Cruz versus Federal Election Commission.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Traynor. A question on the impact of this motion, assuming, as I suspect, that it fails, what would be the impact in terms of this finding on the final report?
Mr. Chairman, if I may?
Brown, of course.
If finding the original finding 5 splits 3-3, then per Directive 7, it would appear in the additional issue section of the final audit report commission.
Thank you. That was my understanding. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Same.
The motion fails with 3 in favor. Sorry, Mr. Vice Chair, are you abstaining or voting against?
I'm voting against, sir.
Roger. The motion fails with 3 in favor. Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Traynor, and myself. 3 opposed, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Roussard, and Commissioner Weintraub. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't draft this out in advance, but I'm going to make a stab at it anyway.
Best type.
I move approval of finding 5 only to the extent it encompasses the individual contributions that would be potentially excessive and not affected by the existence or non-existence of the regulation at issue in the Cruz litigation. And to explain that, you know, as stated earlier, there's $700,000 in potential excessives that would still be excessive with or without that regulation. And it just, I understand your position on the regulation. I understand your position on the litigation. I respect that. But I just don't know why we would give up on the $700,000 in excessives that survive.
I appreciate the motion. Same question, Ms. Brown. What would be the impact of Commissioner Weintraub's motion should it pass and should it fail?
Apologies, Ms. Chairman. Reading through Directive 70, for any recommended finding for which there are 4 or more affirmative votes to make a different finding from that which was recommended by the Audit Division, we will place the recommended finding with the discussion of the finding made by the commission. So if it passes, it will appear in the report. If it does not pass, I don't believe it will appear in the report at all. We would continue to present finding 5 in the additional issue section per the motion that was just taken by the commission.
And for the benefit of the public, what is the practical import of something being in the main report versus the additional issues?
If a finding is in the body, the main portion of the report, it means the commission found consensus at least with at least 4 commissioners. So prove it as written. If it appears in the additional issue section, it does so because the commission could not find approval for from at least 4 commissioners.
Is there further discussion to Commissioner Weintraub? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Both?
No.
No.
No. Motion fails with 3 in favor, Commissioner Weintraub, the Vice Chair, and Commissioner Broussard, and 3 opposed, myself, Commissioner Cooksey, and Commissioner Traynor. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I might ask my colleague, why?
Discussion?
Take a stab at it.
Mr. Traynor.
So,
My concern is, and even though the explanation that we've received with regard to the potential for the $700,000, the confusion that exists with the regulation that is at issue in the litigation leads me to believe that there's more confusion around the particular issue. And until we have a definitive decision from the court on that, and we can see what the court has to say about it, and given that there's no stay in the underlying litigation, I have no idea how far the Supreme Court's going to go in addressing the issue. They're going to be very narrow, or are they going to come out and be very broad? But the fact of the matter is that that issue's before them. And since we don't have a stay of the underlying court opinion there, I don't think it's our position to come in and say yes or no, one way or the other.
Sumatra.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to belabor the point, but I get all of that, but there is still another $700,000 that is unaffected by that. It doesn't have anything to do with assume that a broad decision comes down and the regulation is completely struck down, or alternatively, assume that you're relying on the fact that the lower court has struck it down and there hasn't been a stay. I completely get that. Even without that regulation on the books, our staff is telling us that there is potentially $700,000 in excessive contributions unaffected by that. And I don't understand why we're just putting that aside.
Well, speaking for myself, it's what you just said. It's potentially $700,000. Your motion would have delegated the decision as to the interpretation of the scope of the order to staff. If we had an order in front of us, it's possible, even likely, I'd agree with your analysis of how the Supreme Court's opinion interacted with the facts here. But rejecting that hypothetical reading down the road, and instead having it discussed in the additional issues section instead of the main body, that's the distinction for me.
Okay, thank you for the explanation.
Of course. Colleagues, is there any further action to be taken in this matter? In that case, Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters the commission needs to discuss?
Mr. Chairman, there are no such matters.
Thank you very much. We stand adjourned.